You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
When I was on the ship, I was a wipe. I went on as a wiper, but then I became the guy got sick, and I got as a fire water tender.
Yeah.
And but I had the whole book of the ship.
Yeah.
I learned my superseding steam. I learned the words for 35 songs.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
And I learned the Morse code all the way through.
I did that when I was a kid, 9, 10 years old.
Yeah, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I did that too.
Yeah.
And then we had an air raid in Incheon.
Yeah.
And I said, boy, it will serve you right if that bomb comes down that. Everybody was scared.
Yeah.
And I wasn't scared at all. I said, here we are in Incheon, and you were a pacifist, and you're on this damn ship here. Mm. I hope that damn bomb comes right through and blows you pieces.
Yeah.
I was completely calm about it. I said, that's a kind kettle of fish. Mm. But they kicked me off. They kicked me off. What did I do? I had all the Koreans on the back of the ship.
Oh, yeah.
And I was singing, I was doing with my clarinet, and I was playing it, da-da-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and I was fraternizing with them.
And you're listening to the voice of Erland Rohde. Erland Rohde, someone who many of us got very close to as during the coup period, and we started out the program today talking about the coup. Erland Rohde was often seen with his suitcase, in the demonstration. Every now and then he'd whip out his axe and begin to blow a tune for us while we were going around in the protesting. He was a unique, original, a humanist, a teacher's teacher, a powerful force in the building trades union, and a comrade to us all. He was also a great Pacifican. As I said, he wound up being there whenever we were gathered. He died on December the 15th, this past Saturday, born in San Diego, California. Erland was one of WBAI's most vehement supporters, showing up at local advisory board meetings and bylaw meetings and demos and rallies. He was very active during the year of the coup. Many of you might remember him. He usually had his suitcase covered with stickers and signs, and often he would lug an enormous assemblage of books and papers on a large dolly. Erland was always with his friend Peter Dix, who was sometimes in a wheelchair. So if you can, I'm sure that if you look back at many of the demonstrations that you might have attended, you can remember Erland Rohde. We have some people here with us in the studio, as well as some folks on the line who knew him well, who can share with us some of their remembrances of Erland Rohde. We have Hilda Murillo Rohde, who was married to Erland for 43 years and works in the field of mental health and psychotherapy right now. We also have Gail Rohde Clancy, who was Erland's sister, who resides in California. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. What is going on?
What is going on here? Can you hear me?
I hear you. I have been listening.
Okay.
Just a minute. Gail.
Okay, we can't have dead air. Is Gail Rohde also there?
Yes, she's here. Please pick up.
Okay. Is that better?
It's a little better, yes.
Okay. Just brought you in to talk a little bit about Erland Rohde, who was such a good friend to WBAI.
Now, who do you want to speak to now? Gail is here, and I am here. This is Dr. Murillo Rohde.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to speak to you regarding your husband, Erland Rohde.
Yes.
Perhaps you can tell us a little bit about him as we try and remember him on this day.
Now, I am Dr. Murilo Rohde, wife of Erling Rohde, for 43 years.
Okay.
Eldara.
Yes?
You remember, it's Joe Friendly.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to talk about Erling, isn't it? He was a tough character. And I think just for your benefit, I can see how it's uncomfortable talking about it. He was cruel to you.
He was what?
Cruel.
Who said that?
Joe Friendly. Well, I just jumped in there, but I've talked hours and hours with Erling in the last couple of months and years, and I've been involved with that, but I thought it was going to be helpful, and here I... Eldara, can you talk about it?
About cruelty? No.
Okay.
We also have on the line with us Gail Rohde Clancy, who's Erling's sister. Could you tell us a little bit about Erling and growing up in California?
Yeah, I'm sorry now that I didn't pay attention. He wanted me to listen to these tapes. You know, it made me think of Einstein. I heard that Einstein's family, they didn't care anything about that relativity and all that stuff. But, see, I'm so involved in my life that I didn't. But what I will tell you about Erling is when we were very small, when he was a little over a year, they wanted to get a bed. My mama wanted to get a bed for him. I said, please let him sleep with me. So that's when I knew him the best. I talked to him, and he never argued, and I told him how we needed to be good and help people, and if my mother would be screaming at my daddy, we'd hug each other. But when he was around eight, I went my way, and when he was a young man and we'd have the family gatherings, he would talk hours with my grandpa Simpson, who wrote a book on something about industrialization or something, and was an activist and a socialist, in quotes, some kind of someone that thought there was a way to help the whole world to not have poverty. And Erling would just hang on his every word. Erling, when he was a little boy, my mother wanted us to be musicians too. So he was put on the clarinet, and he didn't want to practice. So I told him, you do your exercise three times perfect, and then you can quit early practicing. So, of course, that would take him about a half hour. And whenever he would be coming home from school, we could hear him singing blocks away and whistling. And I remember when my mama would punish him, and he had to go to bed all day. You never knew he was suffering. He was singing and whistling in bed all day. See, I only know these little things way back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry that Erling wanted me to listen to your tapes, and I didn't. Sometimes it takes a death for us to wake up. I'm going to start listening to him.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that.
All right.
We also have with us in the studio Carolyn Burden, who is a WBAI listener and also an activist in the fight to recover WBAI, and as well as Paul Sorville, who's on the line, a BAI listener and one of the primary organizers in the campaign to get back BAI. And Carolyn and Paul, you both work with Erling.
Yes, I did, and I'm a better person for it. Erling was just an amazing man.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Jack. Yes, I knew Erling through the leafleting campaign. My primary involvement in the struggle, which you did such a good job with in the beginning of the show, Bernard, that was really a wonderful first hour.
Can we get a copy of that? Is there any way?
Yeah, sure. I actually, Gail, we met at the funeral. This is Paul.
Oh, Paul, hello.
I was the guy who brought the WBAI buttons.
Oh, yes.
And I have to tell the audience that when I met a number of Erling's relatives from the West Coast, as soon as they saw the WBAI buttons, their eyes lit up, and they recognized me immediately as someone coming from a big, big part of Erling's life.
He talked
a lot about Pacific and WBAI out in California to his relatives.
That was Johnny, Erling's nephew, my sister's son. Yes, he's an activist, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what I wanted to say about my my experience with Erling is that Erling was one of the captains in the leafleting campaign. He had a responsibility to organize leafleters in his neighborhood, which is around 110th Street in Broadway.
Yeah.
And every Saturday, he would call about 10 people, or not every Saturday, but during the week he'd call about 10 people. And by Saturday, he would be able to organize about three or four of them to come to the corner of Broadway and 110th, where they passed out the Save WBAI flyers and got signatures for the petitions that we were circulating. The petitions were supporting the city council resolution, which actually never came to a vote because we got the station back before the vote ever took place. But it was a city council resolution that advocated the return of the Fired and the Banned. And Erling was very much involved in organizing one of our locations, one of our leafleting locations. So I used to speak to him on a regular basis. And an anecdote that I like to tell people about, which kind of speaks to his dedication, is that we had an arrangement in which I would deliver the flyers to him during the week. And I travel up to the Bronx every day from Penn Station by subway. And the 110th Street stop, which is Erling's neighborhood station, is on the route. And so we had an arrangement where on a designated day during the week at about 6:15 in the morning, when the train got to 110th Street, I would be in the car right near the turnstiles on the other side of the platform. I'd step out of the train, and I'd throw a package of flyers over the turnstiles. Erling would be there to catch them. Then I'd get back on the train and go uptown.
Oh.
And, you know, for me, it was just something that I did as a part of my normal work routine. But Erling, you know, he didn't have to be up that early. You know, it was his suggestion to do it that way.
Okay. Sounds like the old Pony Express. We also have in the studio with us Pete Karakas, who was very active and still is pretty active. In fact, everyone who was pretty much is still pretty active in the radio station. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Bernard. Good morning, everybody.
Okay.
Is this being broadcast right now?
Yes, it is.
You're talking to whoever wants to hear.
That's right.
Oh, my.
And, Pete, what was your relationship with Erling Rohde?
Well, like many of the folks in the BAI audience, I met him through the struggle. I remember seeing Erling at first, thinking he was an eccentric, one of the many Pacific and eccentrics out there. I remember he approached me and some other folks in the outreach committee and said he was going to be the one to distribute as many leaflets as we wanted to, anywhere we wanted to, north of 110th Street. And he came and met me at a friend's place once with his suitcase. The first time I met him, he opened up the suitcase, and I was curious as to what was in there. He had a typewriter in there. He had loads of flyers and buttons from, you name the cause, you know.
From campaigns going by.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he had both leaflets taped outside the, as you said, outside the suitcase, and inside it was full of stuff. And he'd be up in about leafleting 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning with Peter Dix. He was just truly a really inspirational person. I got to say, I will never forget Erling Rohde. Yeah.
And we also have with us in the studio Joe Friendly, who was Erling's friend. And you did a lot of work with him around your program, Truth for a Change.
Yeah, he was like my number one fan. He got all excited about the program and felt in his heart that there was some mission involved in getting as many people to hear it, and he would make tapes and call around before it showed Sunday mornings at 10 and insist that people listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I dropped a lead balloon there earlier. I just want to say that Erling tried to figure himself out. He was a very complicated guy, and he left behind all kinds of letters and tapes talking to himself and recording his conversations with other people. And it is an important archive. He lived his life out loud, and the complexity is there. It might be helpful or useful to talk about the other causes he was in besides BAI, but I can imagine we got a vested interest in pushing BAI. But one of his causes was the exploitation of Harlem. And that was a big part of what he said out loud, that he was obsessed with that unfairness. And one of those last causes was to insist that Columbia include more minorities in their construction. And to his credit, Columbia at least has gone through the motions of publicly trying to do that.
You know, we had a long, difficult campaign, actually, against Columbia. Erling educated me about what it meant to run a construction site and pay some workers at the low end of the scale and others at the high end of the scale. He wasn't content just to record this or call Columbia. He set up a meeting. He showed up at the site. This was the site in question. This time was Columbia and 110th Street and Broadway, where Columbia was putting up a school and a 12-story building. He videotaped the workers coming in. He stalked the site. He called Columbia. He goaded me to set up meetings. Erling was nothing if not relentless once he took on a cause. You couldn't escape his enthusiasm.
You know, Carolyn, that reminds me. What he was proudest of, I think, was climbing the top of a derrick to protest an earlier Columbia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was pretty high up there he got.
Yeah, he was quite amazing, but he worked really hard, and he forced Columbia to call meetings with the community and to announce their policies, and he had that same energy with WBAI. He would call me up several times a day and say, "Oh, this is wonderful. Let's get moving. Let's do this. Let's do that." Tremendous amount of push and energy.
Mm. Speaking of construction, we have on the line with us also Jim Horton, who is a longtime activist, founder of the organization Fight Back. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Okay. Erling did a lot of work with you and in terms of training people to about the plumbing trade.
Yeah, we view Rohde as sort of like the John Brown of the New York City construction industry. Back in, 1970, he began to train workers to get into the plumbers and unions, the building trade unions. He actually set up a training school at Fight Back to train these workers to get the skills to go into the industry. And as a matter of fact, one of the workers that he trained was a worker by the name of George Rios, who he trained to be a steam fitter. There was a black contractor working up on 125th Street on a major office building who took on three of our workers. One was George Rios, a Puerto Rican worker, and two black workers. He was a union contractor with Local 638 of the Steamfitters Union, and they were entitled to go down and join the union. And so Rohde sent them down there to join the union, and the union refused to take them in. Out of that developed what was called the Rios case, from which, to make a long story short, something like 850 black and Latino workers got into Local 638. of the Steam Fitters Union. That was a historical precedent in the whole fight against the entrenched racism in the New York City construction industry. He actually trained those workers, and he set up a very rigorous training schedule. And if these workers did not conform to that schedule, he would just kick them out. They had to be on time. They had to do a certain amount of reading. He just set up an elaborate school that made a real contribution to our fight against the systemic racism in the New York City construction industry. He was, of course, involved in many things. I recall one of his statements that he used to constantly make: you are either part of the solution or part of the problem. And he demonstrated that not only in construction, but generally in the fight for black folk in Harlem. He was a fixture in Harlem. He used to ride his bicycle all throughout Harlem. I think he used to have two dogs tied to the back of his bicycle. And I used to ask him, why did he tie the dogs to the bicycle? He said that's how he gave them exercise. And he was himself a very meticulous person about his health, about how to eat well. And he preached that gospel among the black workers, that they should eat good, healthy food, and that they should exercise. And so he was like a living example of how black working folk could go forward, and he demonstrated that in real terms. He was a great, great man. He will be missed. I do not know any other white person in this city who has done comparable work to Erling Rohde. But I think we should celebrate his life, not mourn it. He made a major contribution, and I think that we are all greatly indebted to the life and the work and the spirit of Erling Rohde.
Amen.
Okay.
Can I interrupt a minute?
Yes.
Bozar just called, and he's really sad. He said hardly any black people have been able to get in. His number is 749-6939, I think. He said you've got it, but he wants some of the black people to be able to talk. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. Any final words, Pete Caracas?
Did you ask me a question?
No, we're getting ready to close out, so I'm wondering whether there were any final words.
Let me just say, we're going to be planning after the holidays to put together a committee of folk and really have a major celebration for Rohde's work, to plan something very meaningful in the Harlem community. And we're going to be inviting everybody who knew Rohde to foregather with us to plan this celebration of his life.
Okay, let us know when that takes place.
By all means.
Okay.
You know, Bernard, if I may, I could speak up for Mr. Pozar. I'm close friends with him, too. In fact, one of the issues that Erling got quite excited about was this issue of Mr. Pozar, which was the idea of democratizing the courts by allowing camcorders loose in the courtroom. It's a technology that's arrived, and it apparently is really a political issue that we have to force the legislature to go with. And Erling was so a believer in the cause that he bailed out Mr. Pozar several times when Mr. Pozar pressed the point at the court gates.
You know, something that occurs to me is that this might be a good opportunity to plug Liz Boyce's documentary in process, because I believe that there will probably be a major scene involving Erling at one of the national board meetings where one of the turning points in the struggle took place, and there were hundreds of activists that came down to protest. Erling, at the end of the meeting, led all of the activists in song, and it was a song that he wrote. It was a very, very inspiring moment, and so people should maybe think about, I don't know, Bernard, maybe at some point you could tell people how to get in touch with Liz and help her to support the documentary about the struggle that she's been working on for so long, and we'd all get to see a great, great scene in Erling's life as well.
Okay, yes, we can do that. We will do that. Let's see. I do want to thank all of you for stopping by this morning and sharing with us. Carolyn Burden, any last words?
No, just that he will be missed, and his legacy really is enthusiasm, and as Erling would say, get excited and get involved. You know, this is a major message.
Okay. So I do want to thank you all for stopping by this morning and sharing some words with someone who's a real friend to WBAI. And you are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI.